One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila, and this is Love University. We're back. I'm an author, speaker, and psychologist. And each week we talk about different topics on love, relationships, self-esteem, how to live a better life. And today's topic I'm very excited about because it's a very important topic, something that applies to a majority of people in the world. And it has to do with the greatness of marriage. Friends first, lovers forever. To have a great marriage, to have that bond, that connection, that compatibility in a long-term love relationship can be an amazing thing. But unfortunately, we hear a lot about the other side. We hear a lot of negative things about marriage. That 50% of marriages end in divorce. That 60% of second marriages end in divorce. And then we have what's called the empty marriage, where people stay married just for the sake of the kids, religion, or economics. And they're unhappy. They're miserable. They don't make love anymore. They don't communicate. They don't have any emotional intimacy. And they feel trapped. They say that young people want to be older. Older people want to be younger. Single people want to be married. Married people want to be dead. No, that's not true. That's an old joke. But if we look at the other side of things, marriage can be an amazing benefit, a very positive thing in people's lives. So why is marriage great? First of all, people who are in great marriages tend to be happier. They say 3.4 times happier than people who are either divorced or not married. Also, people who are in happy marriages make more money. They have better health. They have less incidences of pneumonia, heart attacks, cancer. And even if they do have these diseases, they recover quicker. They have fewer incidences of substance abuse, alcohol or drugs, less incidence of dementia, less depression, fewer accidents, and even less likely to commit suicide. Research shows that people who are divorced had an 83% higher rate of suicide than happily married people, while people who are never married have a 48% higher rate of suicide. So there's a strong connection in the psychological sense between a happy marriage and emotional well-being. Also, those who are divorced tend to have 20% more chronic health problems, such as heart disease or diabetes. So again, it can also affect your physical health if you are divorced or not married in a happy marriage. But the key issue here is looking at the kind of marriage. Is it a stressful marriage or is it a loving and calm marriage? This is really one of the important factors. For example, the emotional tone of the couple when they fight with each other, do they have a strident and harsh tone of voice? Do they yell? Do they do name calling? Do they know how to use conflict resolution like timeout? These are very important aspects and they can actually affect your physical health. Research shows that if you have a heart issue, you're 3 times more likely to have a heart attack when you're in a conflictual marriage, just as much as if you're to be smoking. They did a study with couples and they looked at their blood samples and they found that those couples that were fighting in conflict had a lowered immune system 24 hours later after the conflict. And research shows that heart disease is common among conflictual couples, but for females, typically it's a lack of warmth, lack of coldness that is part of the connection with heart disease. Whereas with males, it's a lack of control or feeling disrespected. On the other hand, when we have calm and loving marriages, things are different. You have a better health, both physically and mentally. They did a study where they gave suction blisters to married couples, and some couples were loving to each other in the study, and others were fighting with each other. The couples who had more conflict took 1 day longer to heal the blisters than those that were in the loving relationship. And if they had a lot of conflict, it took them 2 days to heal. So it does indicate that the loving energy between couples can actually help them heal physically from any kind of disease or problem. In another study, they gave people electric shocks, and then they had them hold their marriage partner's hand, and those people had less stress in the neural parts of the brain. So they actually exhibited more relaxation. So if marriage is so important, especially this great marriage, a marriage that is loving, committed, has positive elements, how do we keep that alive? How do we grow it? Now, some of you listening today may be single. Some of you may be living together, maybe newlyweds, or maybe you've been in a marriage for quite a while, and it's become stagnant. You don't feel the spark. Maybe you fight. There's incompatibility. But it is possible to not just save the marriage, but to transform it, to make it into something great. So we're going to talk about some of these research-proven techniques and ideas, how to keep your marriage at a high level of excellence so that you're happy and feel loved and are loving. First of all, give your partner the benefit of the doubt. In psychology, there's something called attribution theory that looks at how we attribute what people do. For example, internally or externally. Many times, we attribute bad things that people do to their internal traits. So if your partner doesn't take out the garbage, you say, well, he or she is lazy or they're irresponsible. If you say it's an external attribution, something outside them, you say, well, maybe they felt tired this day, or maybe they're sick, maybe they're feeling lonely or depressed for some reason. And you give them the benefit of the doubt. At the same time, in happy marriages, you attribute positive things to internal traits. For example, your partner washed your car for you or made you a nice meal. You say, well, they're loving and they're considerate of me and they care about me. And when you do that, you have a stronger satisfaction rate in your marriage. Now, of course, sometimes your partner may do something that's based on their personality type. Maybe they are lazy or inconsiderate or selfish at times. But the key is to give them that benefit of the doubt. Don't be so harsh with your partner to jump to conclusions and attribute negative things to their bad behavior. And forget to attribute good things to their inner traits. For example, they're conscientious, they're disciplined, they're loving, and things like that. Something else is also very important based on research for happy marriages, great marriages, is that these marriages are considered growth marriages versus destiny marriages. Now, in a destiny marriage, the couple says, well, we were meant to be together, and that's the way we are. But if it's not working out, they'll say, well, then maybe we're not meant to be together. So they're quicker to throw in the towel. People who are in growth marriages realize that there can be incompatibilities, there can be conflicts, but they're willing to work it out and grow together. They realize that marriage is a long-term process. It's a discipline. It's something you have to work toward. Just like you work toward your career, this is probably one of the most important things in your life is to have a great marriage next to your children or your education. So be able to say that I want to improve my marriage and make it better. I want to grow. So an exercise that you can have with your partner is to sit down and actually write down on a tablet or a piece of paper, how can we make our marriage stronger? Spending more time together, communicating more, doing activities together, maybe in the lovemaking area, maybe in dealing with trust issues. Maybe even going to a therapist or a counselor. So being able to grow the marriage is a key issue, and it helps you feel better about the marriage. You feel more satisfied as well. Something else is very important is having gratitude for your marriage instead of taking it for granted. Once couples are married for a while, they don't say the nice things to each other as much or think of them in the same way. They may give them a little peck on the cheek and that's it. But in a gratitude marriage, you are able to write down, you know, somewhere in your computer or laptop or pad, what are the things you're grateful for this person, for your partner? What have they invested? Maybe they helped you go to school and they worked during this time, or they helped raise the kids, or they bring home money for the family, or they're good lovers, they're good companions. They cheered you up when you were down. They supported you in different ways. So think of those things, write them down even. What are you grateful for your partner? What have they brought into your life? Many times, if the marriage is overall a satisfactory marriage and there's compatibility, there are quite a few things you can think about. And the good thing about feeling grateful is that even if one partner is grateful, it's going to increase the warmth of the other partner, the affection. So they will see that you're grateful, and they also will reciprocate with more loving energy. Another way to do that is to think of what we call a ratio of positive to negative comments. So the happy marriages often have 5 positives to each negative. Now, most people do the opposite. They have 5 negatives to 1 positive. So 5 positives would be, honey, you're a great lover, a great marital spouse, a great parent, great provider, but you're a little bit messy around the house. Okay, well, you feel, all right, so they like a lot of things about me, but maybe they don't like this one. But if you reverse it, and which a lot of couples do, you say 4 or 5 negatives to 1 positive. You say, you're a lousy lover. You're a terrible spouse, a terrible parent, terrible provider, but you make good enchiladas. So obviously, you're not going to feel very good about that because there are a lot more negatives than positives. So the 4 or 5 to 1 ratio is the ideal positive to negative to show that you appreciate your spouse and many things that they do. Maybe there's things you don't like, but most of the times, you are pretty happy with what they're doing. Something else is very important is to savor or take delight in the positive things that happen to each of you in life. You know, the good little news that you have. Let's say at work, your boss complimented you, or you got a raise, or you just learned a new recipe, or you lost 5 pounds, or the kids did something great that you helped them with at home. And tell it to your partner. Share that, because when you share great times or good times or good news, you feel closer to your partner. You feel more elevated, and you build up a reservoir of positivity, things that can help you when times are tough. Research shows that companionship and this sense of accomplishment and fun is one of the glues of a long-term relationship that keeps you content and satisfied in it. When you're able to share good news and enjoy it with your partner. Here's another interesting research finding that if you discuss the relationships in a movie together, you're likely to have a more satisfying relationship. So if you watch, it could be a drama, it doesn't have to be a romantic comedy, but any kind of movie that you watch, you talk about the couple and the relationships, you're likely to have a 50% chance, less chance of divorce, which is very interesting. Apparently, you're more committed to learning about relationships, maybe from the couple in the movie, and also talking about your own relationship. So it shows a certain personality that is willing to work on the relationship. Something else that actually predicts successful relationships in marriage is self-disclosure. You know, talking about something that is personal to you. Maybe some fear you have, a fear of getting older and gaining weight, or something positive. You're excited about your future career. You're excited about plans you have with your spouse to travel. Maybe you're a little embarrassed or shy, talking about some things related to sex. Maybe you're joyful about meeting your birth parent. Whatever it might be, you disclose it to your partner, your fears and emotions, and positive emotions as well as joy. Now, the interesting thing about it is that this phenomenon is compounded in a positive way if you share it while you're on a double date. So let's say you're on a date with another couple and partner, You start to share stuff with each other. You actually will have an increased sense of romance and even sexual attraction with your marriage partner as a result, because you're sharing something with other people that are intimate with you, and also you're being open with your spouse. Now, when you think of marriage, sometimes people say, well, I have kids and I work. I don't have a lot of time. But it is very important to go on dates with your spouse. And they look at the kind of dates that you go on, what we call exciting dates versus pleasant dates. And in the study, the couples had 90 minutes a week to go out somewhere, either an exciting date like, you know, hot air ballooning or some kind of excursion, a day trip, something they haven't done before, or the usual date at home, maybe watching Netflix, having some takeout food, or maybe going to eat at a restaurant that they usually go to. What they found is that people that went on the exciting date had more pleasurable experiences with their partner and reported more marital satisfaction. And this has to do with what we call the self-growth theory or of expansion, is that we are more attracted to people and more positive about them when they help us grow and expand. So if you learn new experiences with your partner, or if you grow with them, so you might even think about it. How many new experiences have you had with your partner in the last month? How much have you grown with them? You might go to a self-help workshop, for example, or a museum, or some kind of activity or event where you can learn something, maybe dancing, salsa dancing together, taking classes. So that's actually going to build the relationship more than if you just do the typical date night movie and dinner kind of thing. Having that growth is very important. Time together is also an important factor in predicting great marriages. The average married couple with kids spends only 9 hours a week together, and a lot of that is spent talking about practical matters. So the date nights, sexual intimacy, communication, and having fun is not as common. So it is important to increase that as much as you can, to make time for each other, to go on those exciting dates, to learn new things together, try new things, travel to new places. All these are very important things. The other thing that's important in terms of marital research is communication styles and conflict. How do you resolve conflict? Many times people have what we call the little bads that creep into their conversation, little negative phrases like, you always do that. Why do you always do that? You never do this. You don't listen to me. You never pay attention to what I want. And those kind of things can harm the relationship, can make partners feel resentful to each other. They fight and they have conflict toward each other. On the other hand, it's important to use what are called softeners. Softeners are soft phrases. These are words that reduce tension in the conflict situation. For example, making a little joke, a humorous thing, maybe self-deprecating about yourself, or saying, honey, I see that you're mad right now, or you feel angry, or you don't feel understood. So reflecting back to the person, maybe giving them a little touch on the shoulder in a soft and affectionate, playful way. So these little things married couples often do to diffuse the conflict, to diffuse the anger that they're having at the moment. Also taking a time out. We hear about this a lot with children. When they're doing bad things, you put them in a place where they have to sit quietly. But taking a time out from the conflict. So saying, we can't resolve this right now. I'm going to go shopping, or I'm going to work out. I'm going to maybe talk to a friend. Can be very healthy, because you come back in a more calm and relaxed manner. And you don't say things that you later regret. You might say something to insult your partner or bring up things from the past that are very negative. So taking the time out takes you away from that mindset and puts you out of the situation so you can come back in a fresh way. Now, the other thing is, this is an interesting phrase, is that passion starts outside the bedroom. So there are couples that complain about one of the partners doesn't want sex as much as before, or is not as open as before. And sometimes you have a high demand sexual partner with a low demand sexual partner, and they can have problems. So the key is communicating about their sexual needs, but also realizing that romance and sexuality begins outside the bedroom, the way you treat your partner. In Spanish, we have a phrase called detalles, which means details. The little details you used to do in the honeymoon courtship stage are often missing in the marriage stage. So the little cards and notes you used to leave, the little affectionate texts, flowers, and giving each other a massage, or maybe being in a hot tub together, having romantic rendezvous by the beach or mountains or whatever you are, listening carefully to your mate, listening attentively. Those little details of romance often is what excites you later on in the bedroom and give you the feeling that you're loved, and feel that affection toward your partner will open up also the sexual aspect as well. So that's an important part. The so-called early part of the sexual relationship begins outside in the way you treat each other, maybe working together in the house, in the kitchen, and doing things together can improve that romantic intimacy, sexual intimacy side. And these last three things are, I think, are very important, these last three tips, which actually ties into what we talk about at Love University every week, which is how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature. If you think about it, this really goes together well with a great marriage, because you love yourself first. You build up your own self-esteem. Maybe you have your own individual hobbies. You have a spiritual practice, perhaps. You might go to therapy. You might read self-help books or listen to podcasts. Whatever you do to help you improve your self-esteem can help your marriage, because when you feel good about yourself, you can contribute more to your partner and you're less reliant on them in a needy way, less emotionally dependent on them in a negative way, but you can contribute to the relationship. You can be interdependent. When you have your own self-esteem, you won't be as possessive or jealous or have other psychological issues that can affect the relationship, anger and so forth, because you love yourself. You have a sense of self-esteem. Number two, loving other people, having other friends, platonic friends, that you can also talk to, so that you don't have to rely on your spouse for every little emotional reaction. You might have what we call emotional specialist friends. They specialize in different things. So one of your friends is a jokester that can tell you jokes to cheer you up. Another one will give you good advice. Another one will kick you in the pants and say, let's get going, a motivator. Now, your spouse can be one or more of these, but maybe it's too many things that you may want them to do for you. So if you have other friends, it can really improve the overall relationship you have with your spouse. You have this emotional support. And oftentimes, that can improve your emotional relationship with your spouse, but also your psychological and physical health when you have other supportive friends as well. And also, you can have couple friends, too, that you can hang out with your spouse. And finally, loving a higher nature. Now, we often talk about this in Love University, whether it's God or spirituality or some essence that you believe in. It's important to be equally yoked or to have a similar connection. If both of you, one of you is spiritual in a certain way, so it's good that the other person is similarly spiritual. Now, it doesn't have to be religious. It could be simply things like meditation, maybe doing some kind of a yoga practice or nature practice. Or it could be actually having a religious study together, reading a spiritual book, maybe praying together, and so forth. And especially developing spiritual psychological traits. For example, patience. Patience is an important factor in great relationships and great marriages. Many times people are not patient. They want their partner to do something now, and the partner doesn't do it right now. So developing patience could be as simple as going to a store and taking the long line at the store so you can develop patience intentionally. Or it could also mean eating slower, walking slower, talking slower, and using that as a discipline. And that can then apply to your marital relationship where you're more patient with your spouse. You listen more, you're more patient if they may not do something that you want them to do immediately. Compassion, to relieve the suffering of others. So your partner comes home and you see that they're very tired, so you make them a hot tub and help them get relaxed. And also empathy is putting yourself in their shoes. This is a very important trait in successful marriages. Your partner may be mad at you, for example, because you left the wet towels in a different part that they didn't want you to leave them. And you think, well, this is not that important. I mean, what's the big deal? But it is important to them. You know, they're feeling upset for some reason. So you might say, well, you know, I noticed you're upset that I left the wet towels in the wrong part of the bathroom. And why is that? And then she might say, or he might say, when I was a kid, my dad used to burst into my room and move everything around, and I felt out of control. Or when I tell you something and you don't do it, I feel that you don't listen to me, that you don't really care about my feelings. So all those kind of things can be very important to look at, even minor details that affect your partner, and be empathetic to that and to realize it is emotionally important to them. And therefore, it's important that you take it seriously. And finally, this is one of my favorite phrases, is that marriage is not 50-50. We often think, well, there's two people, so each of them give 50. No, marriage is 90%, 10%, 90-10. There are times when you may be sick or tired or depressed and your partner gives 90% of the load and you can only give 10%. And there'll be other times in the marriage where you're going to give 90% and they're going to give only 10% because they don't have the energy. But overall, it's going to balance out long-term. So you're going to see that marriage is a long-term process of growth, that you help each other, work together, you're a team. And there are times when you pick each other up. One of you may not have the desire or energy to do something and the other one does. So if you think about it, great marriages can be accomplished. But it takes effort, it takes discipline. It won't necessarily be easy at times, but the rewards are amazing. The emotional health, the psychological health, the spiritual, the physical health, the connection and the legacy that you leave behind, whether through your children or the work you do together or things you accomplish, the light you can create in the world as a couple. So remember how to spend time and communicate the right way with your spouse. Look for the good and not the bad. Accentuate the good. Be grateful for what they offer you. Love yourself, others, and a higher nature in relation to your spouse, so you can bring that positive energy into the relationship as well. And most importantly, keep growing and exercising the love marriage muscle. Because think of the love and marriage as a muscle that you need to increase. You go to the gym and work out, you get stronger each time you do it. There's a little bit of pain, but you become stronger. So with a marriage, spending time communicating, spending time doing exercises, doing exciting things together, growth-producing things, all these kind of things can eventually contribute to a long-term, happy, and successful marriage that can really change your life in many positive ways. So my challenge to you this week, my listeners, is to create a great marriage. Or if you're single, visualize what a great marriage would be like. Maybe even write down some of the characteristics of a great marriage. put these things into practice. If you are married or living together with someone or have a steady partner, start to develop some of these things early so you can eventually develop that great marriage. The things of gratitude, savoring good news, all these kind of things we talked about, self-disclosure. Because eventually you'll realize that love is the essence of many things. It's the growth that we have, it's the happiness, it's the peace and the joy. And with a great marriage, you can really contribute a lot to society and to yourself and to your loved ones. This is Dr. Alex Avila. This has been Love University. If you want to write to us about any ideas you have about the show or be on the show, any feedback, you can write to us at lovetype4u@aol.com. That's LOVETYPE, the number 4, letter U, at AOL.com. You can visit us at loveuniversity.love and call us at 310-226-8090 for any questions or comments you might have. So again, my Love University students, I've enjoyed being with you here today. I anticipate you've learned some valuable information to improve the greatness of your marriages, if you have one, or in the future that you will have one. Until next time, put away your laptops, your notepads, your pens and pencils. Love University is now in recess.